And it seems to me that we can't really get away from using labels. We use labels to make decisions and to help us understand things. We use labels on products, and they let us know what's inside the product, what the ingredients are. Like this here, Nature's Bakery Fig Bars. Well, we know there's good stuff in that product. Next one. We know this might not taste good, but we have an idea what's in there, but it's not a snack food. And this next one always puzzles me. Do not eat silica gel. Those are all over the place. Those labels are somewhat helpful, but sometimes we understand what these things are. You know, but we also wear labels. Labels that we've been given. Labels that maybe we think that we deserve. Labels that govern our lives somehow. And there are labels that often we need to be freed from. We all know labels, right? They're the ones that we carry with us on the inside. They inform what we do on the outside. And they're usually destructive and harmful and hurtful. And they can beat us down relentlessly. Those labels hurt. We know all about them. And they may not have been given to us as labels directly, but the messages that we hear means that we put the label on. And maybe you're trying to earn love but keep getting rejected, so you put this label on, unlovable. People live into that. Or maybe what you try to do isn't good enough, no matter what. So we put this label on. Failure. Or maybe you have been seeking attention and not been given the attention you crave, so you put this label on. Annoying. I realized I held up the wrong one and said failure. Here's failure. You know, growing up, I had a label. And the label for me was not enough. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take that and just put it on right here. This is the label that I was given, not enough. And it's complex, right, how we get these labels. We get these messages from our parents and from other people. And we start living into this, and we accept this narrative about who we are. And we live into that, and throughout life we strive because of this narrative that we have. You know, for me, with this narrative of not enough, I tried to solve that in many different ways, but, you know, I got into some things that I thought I was really good at. Wrestling, wasn't really good at that, but I did get into it. I got into weightlifting and powerlifting. Yes, you got it. And believe it or not, searching for a way to feel enough, I even got into, I was a bouncer at a nightclub, if you can believe that. Where's another label I can hold up here? It's tough. I think we all know a bit about this. And sometimes our life can become a striving to remove or run away from the labels that have been put on us from the outside and by others, the labels that we've been given. There's a guy in the Bible. He's a guy of many labels. He's worn labels his whole life. He's defined by the labels that he wears. And his name is Jacob. And he's a really important person in God's story of salvation and redemption. He's a central figure. We learn about him. Yet, the book of Genesis doesn't make any attempt to hide the fact that Jacob was, among other things, a sneaky, conniving character. He was a thief, a deceiver, a liar. He did whatever he had to do to get what he wanted. Jacob was born with a label too. He already had a label attached before he was born. And much of his life can be defined by his striving either to have the label removed or striving because of that label. It's hard to tell, but we know that he was a striver. This is how it started for Jacob. God spoke to his mother, Rebekah, and this is Genesis 25. Before he was born, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other. The older will serve the younger. Those twins, Rebekah, fighting in your womb, they will fight all their lives. Imagine your mother receiving a word like that. Like, that's one way to start a harmonious family relationship, isn't it? This is a how-to for sibling rivalry. This is how you do it if you want that. But there's more. This is how Jacob got his name. When Rebekah's time came, Esau came first. And this is how he was described. He was described as big and red and hairy, and he was just covered with this red hair. So they gave him this really creative name, Esau, which means hairy. But Jacob wasn't far behind. He came holding on to the heel of Esau as Esau came out, pulling on him, grabbing like he's trying to climb up first by pulling his older brother down. So they named him Jacob, which means heel grabber or supplanter or striver or usurper. Neither are really flattering terms. I mean, if you want to name someone a good name, I'd pick Kevin. Any other Kevins here? Because it means kind, gentle, and handsome. And that is a label that I've struggled with my whole life. But Jacob, one who strives to overthrow, to take over, that's a tough label. For much of his life, Jacob, the heel grabber, the usurper, the striver, lived into that identity. Twice he cheated his brother Esau out of what was coming to him. And at least once he took advantage of his blind, dying father Isaac and played him, he conned him, he tricked him into giving him everything that was supposed to go to his brother Esau. He tricked his father-in-law Laban and conned him out of most of his livestock. And later on, when his father-in-law Laban was looking the other way, he took the man's daughters. And he also took almost everything that wasn't nailed down, including the household idols. Jacob was never satisfied. He wanted everything. He was always reaching up and grabbing. Anything that was in his reach, he tried to grab onto. He lived into that identity as the heel grabber. So this is where we pick up. Jacob and Esau have gone separate ways. They don't have a great relationship. They've had a falling out. It was severe. It was really bad. There's lots of hard feelings to go around. But Esau is coming for a little reunion, to have a little chat. Jacob's big, red, hairy brother. He's all grown up now, and he's still big and red and hairy. But he's got 400 armed men with him this time. And Jacob is terrified. He should be, right? He should be terrified. I mean, consider this from Esau's perspective. We don't know a lot about him, but we know he was an older brother. We know he was human with feelings and emotions, hopes and aspirations. Maybe he wasn't as driven as Jacob was, but he was hurt by what Jacob did. Remember, Jacob dressed up as Esau, tricked his father into thinking that he was Esau, and took the birthright that was meant for Esau. So imagine Esau's disappointment. He goes to see his dying father, only to discover that Jacob had already gone and took his blessing and stolen it from the helpless father. This is what Genesis 27 says about this. Esau said to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud. Like he was messed up. Jacob knew this. We don't really know if it was genuine regret or fear, but he is worried about this meeting. You better believe he's worried. And he pleads with God to be faithful to his promise, to be faithful to making him a great nation, as he's hoping the promise will unfold. And he reminds God of the covenant that has been struck between God himself and his forefathers. Yet Jacob is still Jacob. He does what he knows best. He schemes and he plans. So Jacob is nothing if not shrewd. So this is what he does. He decides on a huge gift for Esau, and he sends it out ahead of him, little bit by little bit, gift after gift after gift, messengers with each flock saying nice things to Esau. And Esau would receive these gifts in sequence until he finally meets Jacob. Now, these are two really wounded men who are more pieces of work than they are works in progress, I think. And they both carry these hurtful labels that have followed them and defined them for their whole lives. Now we come to chapter 32. Jacob is about to meet Esau and face the music. He is worried. We're picking up in verse 22. During the night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two servant wives, and his 11 sons and crossed the Jabbok River with them. After taking them to the other side, he sent over all his possessions. This left Jacob all alone in the camp, and a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. When the man saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." "What's your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." "Your name will no longer be Jacob," the man told him. "From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won." "Please tell me your name," Jacob said. "Why do you want to know my name?" the man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means face of God, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared." The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. Even today, the people of Israel don't eat the tendon near the hip socket because of what happened the night when the man strained Jacob's hip tendon. He sent everyone to the other side of the river. Today seems to be the day for spontaneous eruptions of interesting things. Well, who knows what will unfold later on? He's alone, he's stressed, and he has this encounter that leaves him forever changed. It's an encounter about labels. This mysterious guy comes and picks a fight with him, and I don't know for sure if this is normal or not at this time to be waking up in the middle of the night and fight all night, but it's never happened to me. I'd be a bit uncomfortable with that. Don't try it. We don't get any hint that this is about to happen. It just does, like it's the most normal thing in the world. The narrative just introduces it, like, and then this guy came and fought with Jacob all night. Yeah, it's normal. This is an epic fight. There are no rounds. They fight all night. And I don't know if you know anything about fighting or wrestling, but the rounds are 3 minutes. And in the Olympics, there's two rounds of 3 minutes. And it's really difficult. In two rounds, your muscles are burning and you can barely hang on. You're tired and weak and spent. This goes on all night. This is a Royal Rumble, right, Peter? It's a Royal Rumble. Or Survivor Series, okay. I got to brush up a bit. So hats off to Jacob, right? He shows a lot of tenacity. Jacob was a man who understood what it meant to struggle. Jacob is so tenacious in his struggle, so determined that the opponent couldn't beat him. So his opponent does something to him, something ninja-like. I guess he just touches him in the hip. I'd like to learn that one. And dislocates his hip socket. Then the man said, "Let me go. It's daybreak. I'm done." that was fun, but I really need a shower now. But Jacob won't let him go, not until he's blessed. It's like his life has come full circle from the day he was born, and he's been grabbing on and holding on, and he will not let go. So the man asks him, what's your name? And Jacob answers, my name is Jacob. Heel grabber, usurper, striver. Now this is the point of the whole story. It's the emergence of something new. Listen to what the man says to him. Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. He has a new name, Israel, which means to struggle with God. You have struggled with God and humans and have overcome. The label has been removed. Jacob is a man who carried labels his whole life. He saw them every day. He knew about them. He knew his dad loved his brother more than him. He carried the label of unloved and rejected. He knew the label heel grabber. The label was placed on him right at the beginning. He knew the label deceiver. His mom helped him with that one. She carried that label and put it on him. But this is what God does. He takes what was intended for harm and changes it for good. He redeems the mistakes as we make them, and they become part of our story. He takes the labels that we have accepted and lived into and gives us a new identity. That's what he does, and it's happened to Jacob here. It's interesting how the change was made. His new name isn't a total departure from his old name. Jacob to reach and to strive, and Israel to struggle with God and to persevere. God took what was there and refined it. He took what was there and redeemed it. I hope you all who wear labels see how this is a story of incredible hope for us. God takes the labels that we wear and gives a new identity. And it tells us what God is like and what he does for his children. God took what was there, refined it, purified it, and made it what it was always meant to be. You have a new name, a new identity. You have been refined. You have struggled with God and prevailed. And that label that you wear, if you are willing to struggle, can be changed, refined, redirected, and redeemed. Because if you are willing, God wants to take what there is there and make it more. He wants to take what was and give it meaning. He wants to take that label and redirect it and refine it. There's one more thing I wonder about this story. Is it good to wrestle with God? Look at Jacob. He is never condemned for wrestling with God. He fights vigorously. He pins God. He's rewarded for it. He's blessed. I guess the question is, how far can we take this story of Jacob, which is about the emergence of Israel, and apply it to our own lives and our struggles with life and faith and God? But I really believe that this story is a model for how we grow spiritually. I believe that this story is a model for how we are to intentionally pursue our spiritual health or mental health and our emotional health with God. I think it's an invitation. I think it says, if you are willing to wrestle with God, wrestle with your faith, trying to work it out, you are going to emerge from the trap that you were in. You'll get unstuck. See, I'm convinced that God wants to meet us in relationship, and relationship means an authentic struggle and encounter. It means working through tough questions. It means fighting and expressing and holding on and refusing to let go. And I think we are called to be works in progress. It's who we are as his children. He wants us to take those labels off and redeem them. Are we at rest in our relationship with God? At ease? I wonder. See, I wonder if we're called to more than that. If it's actually encouraged that we are to contend with God, that we are to struggle with God. And if we struggle with God, we will have our identity refined. Struggling with God refines us into what we should be. Wrestling with God changes us. We are invited to be actively striving in our faith journey. You know, we are called to wrestle with God and to wrestle with our faith. And I think I want to tell you the cold, hard truth today. If you are not a work in progress, struggling, wrestling, you are stuck and not growing and will not be fully satisfied because you're not living into all that God has called you to be and not leaning into what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. And if you're not a work in progress, it means either you've decided to stop growing or you've reached the pinnacle of perfection. I haven't yet met anyone who's reached a pinnacle of perfection. But I have met people who thought they've reached a pinnacle of perfection. In relationship with God, there is safety. He can take it. There's nothing that God wants more than his children approaching him in authenticity and truth and willingness to work things through. That's what God is like. So we are invited to work out our faith, to be persistent, to struggle, to chase after the promises of God, to grab on, and to never let go. This is what the Apostle Paul says in a letter he wrote to the Philippians. He said this, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purposes." Work out your salvation, because it is God who is urging you on, and he's inviting you to do it. He wants you to become all that he created you to be. And there's a fancy word in our faith tradition for this. It's called sanctification. And it's about this process of becoming more like Jesus, more holy, displaying more and more fruits of the Spirit. And it's not about losing yourself and becoming something different. It's about emerging. It's about becoming all that God created you to be and living into that. Because all of you are unique, irreplaceable, exceptional children of God. And he invites us to have those labels redeemed by working out, working through, and struggling with our faith. Work it out, he says. We are works in progress. Struggling with God refines our faith. See, we need to be more like Jacob and struggle with God and work out our faith. So what labels are you wearing? I have another label. I'm gonna take this one off. I'm gonna throw it away. I don't like it. This not enough thing is not good. There you go. No, I didn't mean that was for you. Don't take it that way. And I wrote a new label, but I wasn't really sure what to put. That takes a lot of thought, but what I put, because I wasn't too sure, was just this. I just put enough. Because I didn't want to write down too much. Because that's what Cindy might say, too much. I didn't want to write down not enough, but maybe just enough. And this is all a work in progress. We're all a work in progress. It's a journey. God invites us to be a work in progress, and you are the work of God. He's created you and empowered you and invited you. You're Christ's workmanship, and he has a new label for you.